Welcome to Zichu Daf Sim Mani Mani by Avram Goldar and today we're Zechus Yavamas Daf Kuv Zayin, beginning the 13th Perek Beis Shammai. So the three Dafs are going to focus on number one. The opening mission, the 13th Perek, brings four Machlokasim between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel regarding Miyun. Beis Shammai say, Eim Ma'anin El Arusos, we may only arrange Miyun for Arusos, but Beis Hillel say, Arusos V'Nesuos, Miyun may be arranged for Arusos and Nesuos. Rav Yudah said in Neim Shmuel that Beis Shammai's reason is Levi She'ein Tanai B'Nesuin, because no Tanai is binding with the Nesuin involving an adult woman. Rashi explains that if one made a Tanai at the time of Kedushin, and that Tanai remained unfulfilled at the time of Bia and Chuppah, we assume that the Tanai was forgiven and is no longer in effect, and the Nesuin is valid. If a minor who is fully married is permitted to perform Miyun, people will come to think, yesh tanai b'nesuin, that a tanai is still binding with regard to marriage of an adult woman, since it looks as if the minor's marriage is being annulled because of some tanai that was not fulfilled. Beis Hillel are not concerned, for they say, meidi yodei d'nesui katana d'rabbaninu. People know that the marriage of a minor girl is only the rabbanin, and that it's annulled through miyun. The Gemara brings three more interpretations of the machlokas. Point number two, Rav said, miyana b'zeh muteres l'zeh. If a minor yavama did miyun to one brother, she's prohibited to the other brother. This is comparable to when a yavama received a get from one brother, she becomes prohibited to all the brothers. But Shmuel said, miyana b'zeh muteres l'zeh. If a minor yavama did miyun with one brother, she is permitted to the other brother. This is not similar to a yavama who receives a get, for in that case, it's the yavam who's giving the get, whereas here, in regard to miyun, it's the minor who's doing the action and saying, Loreinu bach v'lo tzaveinu bach, I do not want you, and I do not desire you. This implies that she's saying, I do not want you, but I do want your brother. Rav Asi said, miyana b'zeh muteres afilu lo, that if she did miyun to the yavam, she's still permitted to him. This is not because he holds that her miyun cannot refuse his zika, and that the zika still remains intact after she did miyun. Rather, it's a case of two yavamim, and the reason why miyun was not effective is dein miyun l'chetzi zika, because miyun cannot be affected by refusing half a zika. Doing a miyun to one of the two yavamim constitutes a miyun for half a zika, and is not valid. And point number three, the third machlokas in the mission was regarding whether miyun must be done before the husband. Beis Shammai say it must be done before him, and Beis Hillel say it can also be done not in his presence. It was taught in the Braisa, Beis Hillel said to Beis Shammai, V'alo Pishon agam miyana ishto shelo b'fanav, did not the wife of Pishon, the camel driver, perform miyun not in his presence, and it was valid? Beis Shammai answered, Pishon agambo b'mido kafushimada, Pishon the camel driver measured with an upside down measure, meaning he was destroying his wife's mulug property. Therefore, the Rabbanan measured Rehim in an upside down measure, meaning they dealt with him the same way. Since Pishon did not follow halacha and destroyed his wife's property, the Rabbanan accepted his wife's miyun, even though it was not done properly. When they were asked how she could perform miyun, since the husband only has the rights of the nixnei melug after nesuin, and Beis Shammai does not permit a nesua to do miyun, the Gemara answers, Trei kitrei avdube. They knotted him with two knots, meaning they granted a double dispensation to his wife. So once again, the 3 points are, number one, the opening mishnah of the 13th perek brings four machlokasim between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel regarding miyun. Beis Shammai say, Eim Ma'anin El Arusos, we may only arrange miyun for Arusos, but Beis Hillel say, Arusos V'Nesuos, miyun may be arranged for Arusos and Nesuos. Rav Yudah said in Neim Shmuel that Beis Shammai's reason is Levi She'ein Tanai B'Nesuin, because no Tanai is binding with the Nesuin involving an adult woman. Rashi explains that if one made a Tanai at the time of Kedushin, and that Tanai remained unfulfilled at the time of Bia and Chuppah, we assume that the Tanai was forgiven and is no longer in effect, and the Nesuin is valid. If a minor who is fully married is permitted to perform miyun, people will come to think, yesh tanai b'nesuin, that a tanai is still binding with regard to marriage of an adult woman, since it looks as if the minor's marriage is being annulled because of some tanai that was not fulfilled. Beis Hillel are not concerned, for they say, meidi yodei d'nesui katana d'rabbaninu. People know that the marriage of a minor girl is only the rabbanin, and that it's annulled through miyun. The Gemara brings three more interpretations of the machlokas. Point number two, Rav said, miyana b'zeh muteres l'zeh. If a minor yavama did miyun to one brother, she's prohibited to the other brother. This is comparable to when a yavama received a get from one brother, she becomes prohibited to all the brothers. But Shmuel said, miyana b'zeh muteres l'zeh. If a minor yavama did miyun with one brother, she is permitted to the other brother. This is not similar to a yavama who receives a get, for in that case, it's the yavam who's giving the get, whereas here, in regard to miyun, it's the minor who's doing the action and saying, Loreinu bach v'lo tzaveinu bach, I do not want you, and I do not desire you. This implies that she's saying, I do not want you, but I do want your brother. Rav Asi said, miyana b'zeh muteres afilu lo, that if she did miyun to the Yovam, she's still permitted to him. This is not because he holds that her miyun cannot refuse his zika, and that the zika still remains intact after she did miyun. Rather, it's a case of two Yavamim, and the reason why miyun was not effective is dein miyun l'chatzi zika, because miyun cannot be affected by refusing half a zika. Doing a miyun to one of the two Yavamim constitutes a miyun for half a zika, and is not valid. And point number three, the third machlokas in the mission was regarding whether miyun must be done before the husband. Beis Shammai say it must be done before him, and Beis Hillel say it can also be done not in his presence. It was taught in the Braisa, Beis Hillel said to Beis Shammai, "V'alo pishon agam miyane ishto shelo b'fanav," did not the wife of Pishon, the camel driver, perform miyun not in his presence, and it was valid? Beis Shammai answered, "Pishon agambo b'mido kafushin mada." Pishon, the camel driver, measured with an upside down measure, meaning he was destroying his wife's mulug property. Therefore, the Rabbanim measured Rehim in an upside down measure, meaning they dealt with him the same way. Since Pishon did not follow halacha and destroyed his wife's property, the Rabbanim accepted his wife's miyun, even though it was not done properly. When they were asked how she could perform miyun, since the husband only has the rights of the nixnei mulug after Nesu'in, and Beis Shammai does not permit a Nesu'a to do miyun, the Gemara answers, "Trei kitrei avdube." They knotted him with two knots, meaning they granted a double dispensation to his wife. All right, so now we go to Simon Daf Kuzayin, and this one was suggested to us by Baruch Halef from Baltimore, as well as Kobe Melkin from Yerushalayim. They both suggested Kuzayin is couscous, which are small balls of steamed semolina, which is served typically with a stew, like a Mediterranean dish. So couscous is our simon. So here goes. The waiter serving couscous after a chuppah was shocked when the Kala Katana did miyun while throwing couscous at her chasen. And unlike a get, she actively said, "Loreinu bach bo tzevenu bach," making her chasen, the camel driver, so mad that he needed to be tied with two knots. Once again, slow motion. The waiter serving couscous, that must mean one daf Kuf Zion. The waiter serving couscous after a chuppah was shocked when the Kala Katana did miyun while throwing couscous at her chasen, which reminds us, the opening mission of the 13th parak brings four machlokasim between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel regarding miyun. Beis Shammai say, "Ein mamanin el arusos," we may only arrange miyun for arusos, but Beis Hillel say, "Arusos v'nesuos," miyun may be arranged for arusos and nesuos. Rav Yehuda said in the Mishmul that Beis Shammai's reason is, "Lefi she'ein tanai b'nesuin," because no tanai is binding with a nesuin involving an adult woman. If a minor who is fully married is permitted to perform miyun, people come to think yesh tanai b'nesuin, that a tanai is still binding with regard to marriage of an adult woman, since it looks as if the minor's marriage is being annulled because of some tanai that was not fulfilled. Beis Hillel are not concerned, for they say people know that the marriage of a minor girl is only the rabban and that it's annulled through miyun. Three more interpretations are brought for this machlokas. So the waiter serving couscous after a chuppah was shocked when the Kala Katana did miyun while throwing couscous at her chasen. And unlike a get, she actively said, "Loreinu bach v'lotzevenu bach," which reminds us, Rav said, "Miyana b'zeh muteres l'zeh." If a minor Yavama did miyun to one brother, she's prohibited to the other brother. This is comparable to when a Yavama received a get from one brother, she becomes prohibited to all the brothers. But Shmuel said, "Miyana b'zeh muteres l'zeh." If a minor Yavama did miyun with one brother, she's permitted to the other brother. This is not similar to a Yavama who receives a get, for in that case, it's the Yavam who's giving the get. Whereas here, in regard to miyun, it's the minor who's doing the action and saying, "Reinu bach v'lotzevenu bach," I do not want you, and I do not desire you. This implies that she's saying, "I do not want you, but I do want your brother." Rav Asi said, "Miyana b'zeh muteres afilu lo," that if she did miyun to the Yavam, she is still permitted to him. So the waiter serving couscous after a chuppah was shocked when the Kala Katana did miyun while throwing couscous at her chasen. And unlike a get, she actively said, "Loreinu bach v'lotzevenu bach," making her chasen, the camel driver, so mad that he needed to be tied with two knots. Which reminds us, even though Beis Shammai hold that miyun must be done before the husband, the Rabbanim permitted Pishon, the camel driver's wife, to do miyun not in his presence, because he behaved improperly and destroyed her nixnei milug. When the Gemara asks how she could perform miyun, since the husband only has rights in the nixnei milug after Nesu'in, and Beis Shammai does not permit a Nesu'a to do miyun, the Gemara answers straight, "Kitrei avdube." They knotted him with two knots, meaning they granted a double dispensation to his wife, and also had her do miyun even though she was a Nesu'a. So once again, the waiter serving couscous after a chuppah was shocked when the Kala Katana did miyun while throwing couscous at her chasen. And unlike a get, she actively said, "Reinu bach v'lotzevenu bach," making her chasen, the camel driver, so mad that he needed to be tied with two knots. All right, now it's time to go to our four blabach chazara. Daf Kuf Gimel. So the simmer Daf Kuf Gimel is Yerushalmi Kugel. So here goes. The amputee Yavam who put a large Yerushalmi Kugel on his lap, Yerushalmi Kugel, that must mean we're on Daf Kuf Gimel. The amputee Yavam would put a large Yerushalmi kugel on his lap to ensure the chalitza shoe would only go on his lower leg, which reminds the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph stated that if Yavam removed the shoe min arakubu lamata kashera, from the knee downward, the chalitza is valid. Min arakubu lamala basua, from the knee and above, it's an invalid chalitza. This indicates that even though the word regal literally means foot, it can be understood to also refer to the leg. So the amputee Yavam would put a large Yerushalmi kugel on his lap to ensure the chalitza shoe would only go on his lower leg, told the Yavama named Yael, standing next to a snake, which reminds us, Rabbi Yochanan said, referring to the incident of Yael and Sisra, Sheva be'ilus ba osa Russia be'osa yom, that Russia performed seven acts of relations with her on that day. The Gemara explains the kashadi be'zuhuma, that he cast impurity into her. But Rabbi Yochanan said that the moment the Nachash seduced Chava, it cast impurity into her. Yisrael shamdu har Sinai, paska zuhuma san. When Klal Yisrael stood at har Sinai, their impurity was stopped and they returned to their original pure state. The impurity was not stopped from the idolaters, and that is what was cast into Yael. So the amputee Yavam would put a large Yerushalmi kugel on his lap to ensure the chalitza shoe would only go on his lower leg, told the Yavama named Yael, standing next to a snake, that she cannot use the sandal mucha from the house with saras because it's considered already pulverized. Which reminds us, Rapapi said in the name of Rabba Mami not do chalitza with a sandal muskar, a shoe that was confined due to the possibility that it has saras, but if one did, the chalitza is valid. With a sandal muchad, a sandal that has been confirmed to have tzaras, chalitza is a pasula, the chalitza is invalid. Rashi explains that since the shoe must be burned, it's considered already pulverized, which means that the shoe is viewed as lacking the minimal size required for chalitza. Rapapa said in the name of Rava that if one did a chalitza with a sandal muchad, the chalitza is still valid. Daf kuf dalet. So this in daf kuf dalet is a code. So here goes. The covert basin that performed a chalitza at night used a code. That must mean we're on daf Kuf Dalet. The covert basin that performed a chalitza at night, which reminds us, the next Mishnah states, the chalitza performed at night is kasher, but Rabbi Lezer rules it's pasula. The Gemara seeks to define what the machlokas is based on. It concludes, mar sabra chalitza ketchilas din damya, or mar sabra chalitza gemar din damya. Rabbi Lezer holds that a chalitza is compared to the beginning of a trial and is therefore invalid if done at night. The Tanna Kamma holds the chalitza is comparable to the conclusion of a trial and is therefore valid if performed at night. So the covert basin that performed a chalitza at night used a code made of saliva to tell the Yavama that she had to do the essential acts of chalitza and spit, which reminds us, if the Yavama removed the shoe and recited the psukim but did not spit, Rabbi Elazar says the chalitza is invalid, but Rabbi Akiva says the chalitza is valid. Rabbi Elazar said to Rabbi Akiva, the pasuk in the parsha of chalitza says, Kacha yeyaseh, so shall it be done, kol davar shemaaseh ma'akev, which implies that anything that is an action is essential. Therefore, if the Yavama does not spit, the chalitza is invalid. Rabbi Akiva said to Rabbi Elazar, Misham raya, from there you bring a proof. The pasuk says, Kacha yeyaseh le'ish, so shall be done to the man, kol davar shemaaseh be'ish, which implies kol davar shemaaseh be'ish, anything that is an action that involves a man is essential. This excludes the spitting, which is done by the Yavama. So the covert basin that performed a chalitza at night used a code made of saliva to tell the Yavama that she had to do the essential acts of a chalitza and spit, while the Elam, who could not perform chalitza because he was not fit to speak, stood outside to guard. Which reminds us, the chalitza of an Elam and Elemis, a mute man or a mute woman, is invalid. And the first part of a Mishnah, which rules that chalitza is valid even when there's no kriya, follows the opinion of Rabbi Zer, who said, Korui labila ein bila ma'akevas, kol she'ein rui labila, bila ma'akevas. Regarding any mincha that's fit for blending is not essential to it, and the mincha is valid without the blending. And any mincha that's not fit for blending is essential, and not blending the ingredients invalidates the mincha. Similarly, if the Yavam and Yavama are fit to speak, the actual kriya is not ma'akev to the chalitza. But if one of them are not fit to speak, the chalitza is invalid. Daf kuf hei, so the simmer daf kuf hei is a Russian hacker. So here goes. The Russian hacker, that must be more duff. Kuf hey. The Russian hacker, who came from a family whose members died young, gave a hacking class on learning in chesed, which reminds us, Rabba said that the sin of Beis Eli cannot be atoned for by a carbon on mincha of a miskaper who would divrei Torah, but it can be atoned for with Torah learning. Abai said it can be atoned for with acts of chesed. Rabba and Abai were both descendants from the house of Eli. Rabba, who engaged in Torah learning, lived 40 years. Abaya, who engaged in both Torah and chesed, lived for 60 years. A braisa taught that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was informed that there was a family in Yerushalayim whose members would die when they reached the age of 18. He suspected they were from Beis Eli and told them, go and engage in Torah and live, which they did. So the Russian hacker came from a family whose members died young, gave a hacking class on learning in Chesed, and when he discovered a diagram of a person praying looking down, well, his words floated up. Which reminds us, there was a Malkokas based on Psukim whether one should daven with their eyes downward toward Eretz Yisrael or upwards toward Shemayim. When Mishmel Rabbi Yossi heard what was being discussed, he said that his father Rabbi Yossi had said, one who davens needs to direct his eyes downward and his heart upward so that one can fulfill both Psukim. The Marshal explains that Rabbi Yossi held that most of the Shekhinah left Eretz Yisrael after the Churban, therefore one's thoughts should be directed toward Shemayim, but since some of the Shekhinah remains in Eretz Yisrael, his eyes should be directed downwards towards it. So the Russian hacker who came from a family whose members died young gave a hacking class on learning in Chesed. And when he discovered a diagram of a person praying, looking down while his words floated up, a heavy-set rabbi slowly walked to the front of the class. Which reminds us, the Gemara relates the exchange between Abdan and Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi when Rabbi Shmuel, who was heavy-set, entered Rabbi Shir, and it appeared as if he was stepping over the heads of others who were already seated. Later, Rabbi Shmuel clarified to Rabbi that his father, Rabbi Yossi, ruled based on the word ish in the pasuk that the yavam must be an adult, aval isha ben gadol ben katan, but a woman can be an adult or a minor to perform chalitza. Daf kufvav. So the siman daf kufvav is a tightrope walker walking a fine line. So here goes. The tightrope walker. That must mean our daf kufvav, walking a fine line. The tightrope walker walked across the tightrope to get the money he was promised for doing chalitza, which reminds us it was taught in a braisa, chalitza mutes kashera, a mistaken chalitza is valid. And Rav Yochanan explains this is wherever they tell the yavam, perform chalitza with her on condition that she'll give you masayim zuz. Rashi clarifies that making an act contingent on a condition is learned out from the Tanai B'nai Gad Mein Reuven. Since that act was made possible through a shaliach, referring to Yeshua, so too the act must be possible to carry out through a shaliach. Since chalitza cannot be performed through a shliach, it cannot be made conditional based on a tanai. Therefore, the chalitza is valid even though the yavama did not fulfill the tanai. So, the tightrope walker who walked across the tightrope to get the money he was promised for doing chalitza was dismayed when all he found was a chalitza document with the entire parsha on it. Which reminds us, the Gemara discusses how the psukim are written in the chalitza document given to the chalitza. Abaye holds that since the parchment was not scored, only the beginning of each pasuk could be written on it. Rashi explains that a parchment that's not scored cannot have four consecutive words written on it, since one may only write psukim as part of an entire Sefer Torah. Marzut would score lines in the parchment and write the entire parsha of a chalitza on it. In the case of a chalitza document, the kavanah is merely for a sipur dvarim, to relate the chalitza procedure, and it has no kedusha, and since it's written for the mitzvah, it's permitted to write the whole parsha. So the tightrope walker walked across the tightrope to get the money he was promised for doing chalitza was dismayed when all he found was a chalitza document with the entire parsha on it, and then almost fell off when the yavama on stilts spit towards her short yavam, and the wind carried the spittle his way. Which reminds us, Abai said, if the yavama spat and the wind carried the spit away before it reached the yavam, she has not accomplished anything. This is because we require the fulfillment of the pasuk, v'yarka b'fanav, and she shall spit before him, which implies that the spit must come before the yavam. Therefore, if he's tall and she is short, and the wind carries away the spit, eka b'fanav, there is the fulfillment of spitting before him. But if she is tall and he is short, and the wind carries away the spit, we require that the spittle first reach level with his face, and then go away with the wind. All right, so that concludes today's shiur. This is Rabbi Avram Goldman Zichu wishing you a great day and great learning.